Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
With or aware of how many?
No, I'm not. Tell me about it.
There are literally, I don't know, I think there's hundreds. It seems to me because I get here from this guy, from that guy, I get a telephone call from somebody in Seattle. Talks for a half hour and says, hey boy, this is costing you a lot of money. He says, oh my goodness, yes. I said, wake up. He said, well, he says, I was so interested and imbued in what we're talking about, I forgot. I said, well, you remember when you get about a $20 bill from the telephone company. But this is the way they are. From all over the nation, from even from England, I get requests for information. You see, I'm the last one. I'm the only one that can get it from where they
right.
get it from the horse's mouth.
Right.
Because the other boys are dead, mm-hmm. and the two that are not dead, they really were fill-ins,
mm-hmm.
even though they were very capable.
Mm-hmm.
They
weren't the original, yeah.
The Three Stooges made the mark long before they got into it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you any specific questions
yes.
you want to ask me?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Are you hooked up?
Yes, I'm hooked up.
Well, that wall contains a photographed history, really, of my great deal of my motion picture career. And the people involved, as you see, the top row are awards, Academy Award nominations, and awards from the exhibitors. And that's where it counted. Those awards were for business, for money.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps excellence was secondary. The main thing is that they were awarded, as you can see, by the leading motion picture magazines and the exhibitors of the United States or the world in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Can you read any of it?
Well, I see the Motion Picture Herald, in association with Fame, is honored to present the Award of Achievement to the Stooges Comedies and selected by the exhibitors of the United States and Canada.
That's right.
And that was in 1955. This one in 1951 is the Motion Picture Herald, in association with Fame, has honored to present this Award of Achievement to Stooges Comedy, selected by the exhibitors of United States and Canada.
Yeah, they're all pretty much from the same people, but that's all that really matters. You,
mm-hmm.
you've read the Academy Award in the center there, isn't it? Which one says Academy? Doesn't that say Academy?
Production of Kiss, yes, Kiss and Yell, that one there, uh-huh. That's this one here. You can see the Oscar in the back.
Yeah.
That one, uh-huh.
Yeah. That was for Kiss and Yell, I guess. Who was in that one? Vera Veig?
It doesn't say. I don't know off the top of my head.
Oh, it just said presents this to Jules White for
uh-huh. yeah. Outstanding Achievement, production of Kiss and Yell.
Uh-huh.
December 1946.
And what's this next one? Isn't that Academy also?
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was bleached out a little bit. That was for the jury goes round and round.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In 1945.
Yeah. Well, what I was getting at.
Were you always a director, or were you a performer at one time?
Well, as a child, I was an actor, a child actor. That's how I broke in. I lived around the motion picture industry, a little village called Edendale.
Edendale?
Edendale was the original Hollywood before lightning struck Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And
where is Edendale?
It's on, are you acquainted with the city?
Yes, somewhat. Uh-huh.
Well, Glendale Boulevard,
mm-hmm.
If Sunset Boulevard crosses Glendale Boulevard and you go, I think it's west about 3-4 miles, and there you will find what was Edendale. The old Mack Sennett studio still has a resemblance of a studio. One of the stages that has been used for roller skating, bowling alleys, and what have you, is about all that is left there, because most of the industry moved to into Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And this little Edendale is where I lived, and that's where all the studios were at that time. I'm talking about 1908, 9, 10, I don't know, approximately there. And my aunt had some empty grocery stores that were rented as a studio. You want to move that lamp? Is it in your way?
No.
This one.
I'll tell you, I moved the chair a little bit and then we're set.
All right.
Okay.
And so I had entree to the property through my aunt's house in the back, and the studio was in the front.
Oh, really?
So that gave me access to...
Just hop the wall.
...to the studio, and I made friends easily, and the producer was a very nice fellow, and he gave me work. I could ride like a burr. Everything was Westerns in those days. Pictures maybe... Oh, I dare say the average length of a picture in those days was anywhere from 2 minutes to 7 or 8. They were all short subjects, even dramas or comedy or whatever they were. And as time went on, they lengthened them. You know the history of the industry. And I grew up with it. My brother Jack was a year and a half older than I. He worked at Mack Sennett on the switchboard. He was a telephone operator at the age of about 12, I don't know, something like that.
It's been interesting to see all the calls that come into that place.
Yeah, and from there he graduated into still photography and helping develop film. Everybody did everything. There were no unions. I remember when I'd see a company go to location and I knew everybody. Mm-hmm. I'd grab one of the big carrying cases that had film in it or had extra lenses or... help the prop men, because they had no trucks. They had horses and wagons. And mostly they carried them or had carts that they pulled. And I used to help them because they were all men that I knew. The directors were my neighbors. I worked with the first version of Rex Beach's Spoilers. That was a very big outdoor story. And in this film, they've had the very first big knockdown, drag-out fight where furniture fell and men got hit on the head with chairs. And like you see today everywhere and anywhere, and especially in the Westerns, those knockdown, drag-out fights. That was the very first one to grace the screen. If you research that, you might find it's worthwhile the history of it, of the making of that picture.
That's interesting.
And the director, Colin Campbell, was my neighbor.
Colin, C-U-L-L-E-N?
C-O-L-A-N, I think it was. C-O-L-E-N. Colin Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L. There were only two directors. One of them, his name was Edward Boggs, and the other was Colin Campbell, and they were the two greats until Thomas Ince and D.W. Griffith came into the fold, you know?
Yes.
Even though these men were making some pictures, even at that time, I believe. I'm not really the greatest historian of the entire motion picture industry or its history, you know? I do remember things that I remember, that I was part of.
Yes.
I worked for D.W. Griffith, who was later, when I grew up, and I started to be a director. D.W. Griffith, of course, was God to directors.
Yes.
He had invented so many things that all directors use, the moving camera, the close-up, the cutting film properly, the dissolves. He was all those things. Matter of fact, I think when I was 12 years old, I worked in his film laboratory. Worked in the developing room and on the printing machines. And a couple of years later, I worked at William Fox Studios on those same machines. I learned to be, I did about every job there is in the picture business. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's many you could name except crafts like a tailor, sewing up materials or, when my brother got his own studio, and he was then about 20 and I was 18 and a half, mm-hmm. I became his right hand more or less after a couple of years of thorough briefing and teaching. Mm-hmm. And he taught me how to edit films. He was a whiz. His hands were magic. He could, because the film was silent, you could do tricks with that.
Yes.
And we grew. There were four brothers. We're all very prominent in the building of a certain portion of the motion picture industry. Mm-hmm. As I say, my brother Jack was a producer at 20, mm-hmm. And a director about at 18. He directed, mm-hmm. and. Then my younger two brothers, one was a cameraman, Ben, and he pioneered in aerial photography just at the tail end of World War I. And they really used crude methods. They'd wire a 2x12 onto the body of the plane, mm-hmm. just above, so you could look over the wing, mm-hmm. then mount the camera in a hole in this 2x12 with big bolts and washers to hold it in place, and then a couple of leather straps that were secured well so the cameraman would lay down and look in his camera, and he was quite safe. But they had a safety so that he couldn't fall. Mm-hmm. They tied a rope around his legs.
Crude, but it worked, huh?
Well, thank God they never had to. They didn't do stunts with a camera mounted and the cameraman. And our brother Sam was a still photographer, had his own still lab. Then he became a cutter, film editor, and a director, and a producer. And he's right now working on a very big project. He was the associate producer of he produced the My Friend Flicka series, which was very successful, about a horse. I don't know if you remember, it's quite a few years ago.
It will be included, it's going to be included in my book. That's a children's show.
Oh yes, this was a very good children's show.
Is he still around?
Oh yes, thank goodness. He's working on a multi-million dollar project right now. I can't give you any details because But all it takes is to publish that, and 25 guys will be researching it and try to beat him to the punch if it's worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But he's the Perry Mason Show. He was associate producer of the Perry Mason Show for the first 5 years of its existence. And so we have contributed quite a lot to the industry, from the bottom to the... Well, I guess my position in the short subjects field was about equal to anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I surpassed anybody, but I sure held my own with anybody.
You want to mention any quickly?
Well, there's really no need to mention them. Everybody knows them. I mean, my chief competitors were Max Sennett and Hal Roach. But we held our own. We were able, they had quit business and we were still going strong. I had we didn't have too much competition because there weren't that many made that we had to compete, mm-hmm. other than just the natural rivalry of each wanting to be better than the other, which is prevalent in any kind of business with men of conscience. So that was very interesting to see what they made and compare it with what I made. Mm-hmm. We all had something similar. Of course, when you have a team like Laurel and Hardy, you have a unique situation there. Mm-hmm. The Stooges were great in their niche, but they were not Laurel and Hardy. Mm-hmm. Laurel and Hardy were supreme artists. And I think the Three Stooges are, I patterned them really that way. They're living caricatures. Mm-hmm. And they are. They were very successful. People liked them very much. To this day, adults amaze me. it amazes me how many adults still love to look at the Three Stooges. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's sort of habit. They grew up with them. That's why you have Mexican food and Chinese food and Jewish food and Russian food, anything you want to name, because people throughout the world grow up with certain things. So,
how did the Three Stooges begin? Can you tell me that? Were they already developed before you had met them?
Yes, they were developed in Boardville. Mm-hmm. They were the Three Stooges of a man by the name of Ted Healy. Mm-hmm. They worked in vaudeville and then worked in nightclubs and shows. They did some very big New York shows. They were very capable men. Their antics were always very active, to say the least. The slapping did not originate with our pictures. Ted Healy slapped them around for years. That's a fact.
Yeah.
But when they broke away from Healy, they brought their pattern to us, which was primarily the physical activities. Mm-hmm. But we had some very cute pictures, and we made some very funny pictures.
Was that your first directing job?
Oh, God, no. I started to direct pictures in 1923.
Can you mention some of your top ones?
Well, it was called Educational Pictures Corporation. Mm-hmm. And they were little one-reelers. There was a boy by the name of Cliff Bowes. We had no stars.
Yes.
The gags and the action. Mm-hmm. We didn't. And Monty Collins, who was a very fine comedian. I used him later, teamed him with a man by the name of Tom Kennedy. And their pictures were as hilarious as anything that ever graced the screen. Mm-hmm. Not barring Laurel and Hardy.
Yes.
Or Chaplin or anybody else for the number and volume of laughs. You understand? Maybe they didn't have the finesse.
Yes.
But their films were continuous laughter in many instances. And
well, had you heard of the Three Stooges prior to?
Yes, sure. I was at MGM when they were there with Ted Healy. Mm. I knew the boys quite well. I was directing other films at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. And they were under contract with Ted Healy. And they worked in a lot of the, they did.
You mean they worked with other larger, they worked with other stars?
Yes, they were not the stars, but they mm-hmm. were listed amongst the featured players of the picture. Mm-hmm. Ted Healy was very well known, and he was a very funny man. He was a very funny man, and the boys augmented him greatly. They had a very, very valuable combination. It was too bad they split up. Mm-hmm. But it didn't hurt the Stooges. It didn't hurt anybody, really, except that where you had one apple called Ted Healy and the Three Stooges, you now had to cut that apple in half, and Ted Healy was half and the Three Stooges were the other half. So if you wanted the whole apple, you'd have to put them together. This is what I'm saying. It's too bad that they had to dissect themselves that way. Mm-hmm.
What was the first Three Stooges you were asked to work on?
Well, when I took over, Columbia had made one. And my ex-partner, see, I started at Columbia directing Sidney and Murray and Walter Catlett. and Leon Errol, who were Ziegfeld Follies comedians and stars. Sidney and Murray were the old Coldens and Kellys. And that man holding the book, that's Zion Myers, who originally came in as the producer. And I was his as the director. And I had been, as I say, we had made pictures for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and he had worked with me at Educational. I helped him really to become a director. Mm. He helped a kid by the name of Mark Sandwich, who was his cousin, who wound up making the Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers pictures. Mm. So when I came in to Columbia, Zion had charge, but we were partners. He wasn't the boss and I wasn't the boss. Later on, he came back to work with me and we worked as partners. This was a very brilliant, wonderful man. So I first directed them and the others, as I said, Leon Errol and Walter Catlett and George Sidney and Charlie Murray. And I made quite a few of them, and then we signed up the Stooges. And they made one picture, Zion did, with the Stooges. It was called Men, it was called the Woman Haters, and it was done in recitative. You know? That's recite the lyrics to the music rather than try to sing it. Mm-hmm. But it was a musical, ostensibly. So, this is my grandson, Derek Viner.
Hi.
Hi.
You're all wet.
Yeah, you're all wet. Go on, dry up. Anyway, they made this picture, and it was very successful. They had a option for four more for that year with five-year options of eight apiece. Hmm. So when Zion came in, he got a chance to go over to RKO and do work on big features, and I took over the short subjects department. And then we took up the option of the Stooges. And of course, as I said, when I created this whole department, because Zion hadn't done too much with it, he'd only made a couple of pictures or four, I think. And when I was with him, I did what I wanted, you know. But the Stooges were only one of the units of my production overall program. Mm-hmm. I had, I forgot about Andy Clyde was one of the first ones I signed up because he had been a big Max Sennett star and a very wonderful comedian. And I think he was with me before we took up the option on the Stooges. I'm not sure, but he stayed with me from the start to the finish.
Got a picture of him?
Yes, that is Andy. Yes, in the television series of Hopalong Cassidy, he was Hopalong's partner.
Huh.
But you see up there on that wall some of the greatest. Right below him is Sterling Holloway,
yeah,
who is still... still doing voices for Disney.
Yes, uh-huh.
Harry Langdon, who was a giant, and Myrna Loy, Una Merkel. See the fellow, the rope behind him? Right where your hand is, drop it to your right. No, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, my right here?
That's
here.
It. That's it.
Uh-huh.
That's Harry Langdon. His wife is writing a book about him, and I helped her. I wrote about 10 pages for them, but he was one of the funniest people in the industry and a big, big star. And he is a story all in itself. Frank Capra made the pictures with him and made a big star of him. Right next to you got Slapsy Maxie Rosenblum and Maxie Bear. You know who they are?
Here?
Yes. Max Bear was a
Bear,
heavyweight champion, and Slapsy Maxie Rosenblum had been a contender for years.
Uh-huh.
He was very famous in nightclubs. In fact, they were a famous team. Right up above that is Billy Burke. You remember Mrs. Flo Ziegfeld, Billy Burke? See, you don't know. These are before your time.
Well, this character, I recognize his face.
Well, that's Emil Sitka, but I'm talking about the lady.
To the right?
The lady to the right. Uh-huh. That's Billy Burke. She was Mrs. Florence Ziegfeld. Uh-huh. And this couple right here, this fellow right here is Wally Vernon and Eddie Quillen, both old-timers, very funny men, very good comedians.
This face too.
I teamed them up, yes. And this was Ann Jeffries, who later did the Topper series. I gave her her first job in pictures, I think. Gorgeous woman, very capable. Buster Keaton, who was one of the biggest giants in the comedy business. See him there with me?
Yeah.
Buster Keaton was
there,
ranked with Chaplin and Harold Lloyd. And Buster was right there on the top.
And you directed him in one of the movies?
Oh, a whole series. I'm just building that. There was Bert Wheeler, the famous Wheeler and Woolsey team, flying down to Rio. They were the comedians, very, very highly regarded team. And there's the three Stooge uh-huh. groups.
Yes.
You see?
Which and this kept is, changing this character, right?
Yes. Yeah. And this is Lucille Ball, a kid we had under contract at Columbia, and she was great even then.
I wouldn't recognize you there, would you?
Well, she was just a kid. She was only maybe 18 or 19, I don't know. It's a long time ago.
Yes.
And then there's Charlie Chase, who was a blockbuster in his time. And then there was a girl by the name of Betty Grable, who became a very big star. She passed away a few years ago. And Slim Somerville and Chester Conklin started out as Keystone Cops. But they were both very prominent players in their... Slim Somerville had a whole series of several years of it at Universal, his own series. So that's the picture. But I think that...
Well, did the Buster Keaton thing happen before the Three Stooges?
Buster Keaton was a star when I was a young fellow.
Sure.
Buster Keaton was a big star way back in 1916 or 17. He started as Fatty Arbuckle's foil. And he was so funny that he graduated to one of the biggest comedy stars in the business. He was at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer for many, many years.
So you finally had a chance to
direct
him.
Then he was out. His pictures didn't sell or something, and I found out he was available, and I sent for him. He hadn't worked for quite a while. Same is true with Charlie Chase. He hadn't. These people were stars. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were big. Bert Wheeler and Woolsey had broken up. These were men that really...
So you kind of called them in and fell out where they were, and then kind of said, hey, let's make another picture?
Oh, I knew their qualities. Mm-hmm. I believe the talent never dies. Mm-hmm. Maybe it gets tarnished and locked up in a dark closet, but talent never dies. Like this man, Harry Langdon, the same thing. He hadn't done anything for several years. And these were men that were so great, I just bet my life on them.
Yes.
They did not let me down. They were equal to the occasion. Whole new pop audience was born since then.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Since the time they were stars.
What was it like to work with Buster Keaton?
They were great people. You're talking about professionals.
Yeah, you didn't to take a lot of time with them. You kind of knew.
Well, it's not a question of time. It depended on what we're trying to do. Sure, time is of the essence, and you always take time. But I don't care who it is. Charlie Chaplin would maybe shoot two scenes a day. Mm-hmm. But when he shot those two scenes, he had a half of a reel or more, and they were of a quality that no one could duplicate. So it's like you say to a surgeon, taking that man's appendix out was a big job, wasn't it? You know, sure it was a job, but that's his work. Mm-hmm. It's his expertise, is taking out people's... appendix.
Did you get to know Buster Keaton very well?
Very well, indeed. I knew him many years before he worked for me. I knew everybody in the business, mm-hmm. and most of them knew me. Remember, I grew up in the picture business, and after 25 years.
You have kind of a recognizable face. You look like you should have been an actor yourself.
Well, at that stage of the game, I wouldn't want to be. But 25 years of making Columbia short subjects. Oh, and I was going to get back to the one thing. The Three Stooges was only one of my series, as you can well see.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I made as many with Charlie Chase, with Buster Keaton, with Andy Clyde, with Baron Rosenblum. We made 4, 6, 8 a year with each of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I had as many.
I didn't realize that. I thought you were stuck in a rut with the Three Stooges.
No, I wouldn't call it a rut either. Uh-huh. I was, but as I say, it was like an automobile, like, let's say, General Motors. Mm-hmm. They don't only make Cadillacs. They make Cadillacs and Buicks, mm-hmm, and Pontiacs and Oldsmobiles and all the many others. They're all equally important to General Motors. Mm-hmm. Correct? They're all equally important to the public.
How many years did you work with the Three Stooges?
25.
25. I didn't realize it was that.
But with most, a lot of these people, with Andy Clyde too. But some of these others came in a little later. And some of them we didn't continue with.
Did the Three Stooges ever fight with each other? I mean, off camera?
Oh,
because
not.
They worked together for so long.
Well, not any more than maybe I'd get in a huff with them, or they'd get in a huff with me. They kept their nose pretty well to the grindstone. Also, remember, I ran a very tight ship.
You're pretty demanding to work for, huh?
Very much so. I knew what I wanted. I knew exactly how I wanted it. I didn't have time to ask an actor to show me. When I directed, I showed the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went out days before on the set, marked every camera move, every setup, every breath that anybody was going to take. And if no one else knew the routines and the ropes of what we're going to do, I did. I had to. Economics dictated it.
Mm-hmm. Out of those 25 years, what would you say would be your favorite of the Three Stooges features?
Oh,
do you have a particular favorite that really went over well?
Well, to tell you the truth, the first 20 years, they all went over real well. I dare say that the one I made about the World War II with the Three Stooges, as one of them was Goering, one was Goebbels, and one was Hitler. And the hell did I call it? I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. I dare say the novelty of that.
When you say you call it, did you name some of the pictures?
All of them.
You named all of them?
All of them.
So you were more than just a director?
Sure, I was the producer. And director.
And creator?
Well, when you're a producer, you better be a creator. Because
mm-hmm,
the writers do a good job, but you better have your touch on it to make it
mm-hmm,
better.
Mm-hmm.
I never shot a script that I didn't write the screenplay myself. Because as I wrote it, I was shooting the film. When I was shooting the film, I was memorizing every move.
So some of it, I take it, was a conglomeration of what you had up here and what the Three Stooges had been doing for years.
And what, well, don't let me, I'm not selling them short. They contributed very handsomely.
Oh, I know that.
When they'd come in after we were all through the script, and we'd have a reading and a discussion and get anything they could contribute there. And then on the set, always, I'd always ask an actor to come and watch me play the scene for him and then contribute anything he wanted or change if it was better or show me what he had up his sleeve that was better. And naturally, I'd adopt what was the best.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever we did, we wanted to know what we're doing. We didn't have too much time. You get on that set, keep that camera rolling. But be damn sure you're not just shooting film.
Mm-hmm.
So, these men were capable men. Especially Curly. You'd send him into a scene. He couldn't rehearse too much. he'd get a little bit stale because he was a spontaneous comedian, and I never wanted that to be lost. Mm-hmm. And he would do little things, like if you say to him, oh, tell him to go sit down, and he'd wave his hand with a crazy kind of a gesture. But when we got, these became standard, we knew by then what we wanted to do as a rule, pretty much. But Curly would give little looks and do silly little cute funny things. And the other boys augmented him. After all, follow the road with him, you know? He was they were very capable men. I was heartbroken when Curly had that stroke. Firstly, I liked the boys. And Curly was living across the street from me. And right in back of me, a block right behind me, lived Champ. And two blocks away lived Mo. So I was
somewhere near here, huh?
Yes, near Toluca Lake. Mm-hmm. So I was surrounded by them.
And you visit each other's houses on occasion?
Oh, yes, we socialized, yes. If I had the time now, I'd show you pictures, but I want to conclude with you.
Yeah, I heard a tape of Stan Laurel talking, and one thing he felt was that he would never wanted to socialize with
Laurel Hardy? With Babe Hardy, that's
yeah,
right.
Because he was afraid that, you know, they'd have some kind of problem. And
well, there was a situation with them, even on the set. Stan was the boss. Stan Laurel was the boss. Not Hal Roach or not the director. Mm-hmm. They too were part of the team. But if Stan says, I don't like that, I think all of us should come in from here and do so and so and so and so and then come around here and then I come in. Well, nobody could argue with him because he was so good. Mm-hmm. Even with the director as wonderful as George Stevens and Leo McCarey. You see, you're talking about two of the greatest. But they had respect for him, and he had respect for them. He wouldn't attempt to make the whole picture, but he knew what was good for him and Babe. And Babe never argued. Babe was smart and a little bit lazy. He was smart enough to let Stan run the show, and he doesn't get blamed if it's no good, and if it's good, he gets the credit anyway, and he still makes a lot of money. So I thought he was a very smart man.
So you mentioned Curly had a stroke. Now, did that cut him out of pictures completely?
Yes, it ruined him.
Was he left paralyzed? Or?
Yes, one hand, and his speech was
a little slurred, huh?
Very, very much so. Tongue-tied, partially. He talked with a very halting kind of like that.
He wasn't that old, was he?
No, he was a young man. Yeah. He was in his 40s, I think. But truthfully, I don't really know his age. Mm-hmm. But what we did do is we put him into two scenes in two different pictures.
After the stroke?
Some years after, when he had recovered fairly, quite well considering the stroke. Mm-hmm. And we had a scene in which he was there's a guy on the train, and one of the boys does something or another, and he grabs a newspaper from a man to hit, and it was Curly. And Curly went, pantomimes, no, 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 took his picture away, gave him a bow.
And this was while the new Curly had been put in the picture.
Oh, yes. He was just doing this little tidbit. Then another time, he was a chef in the kitchen.
Just long enough for the audience to recognize who he was. Yeah.
Right. We put a big soup strainer mustache on him and a chef's cap, and he's cutting something with a cleaver, and the boys do something or another, and he brandishes the cleaver at him, and they run.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
He, I guess, lived for a couple of years after that?
Or? Oh, yes, several years. He got married again after that.
Really?
Yeah. He recovered quite handsomely, but he's had the lip, the one arm was useless. And
did he have a kind of a wish in the back of his mind somewhere to be back in the Three Stooges?
Or didn't ask him because that's too traumatic to ask a man.
But I'm sure they got to bring him back in.
I'm sure that he would have. I'm sure he would have loved to be back in.
What was keeping that from happening?
What?
What was keeping that from happening at that time?
He was a sick man. He had a stroke. He had no use of his left arm. He had a pronounced limp. His expressions were halted.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever see a man who had a stroke?
Well, no.
You look at a man with a
half
a,
there, huh?
Huh?
He's half there, I take it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Tell me about Mo Howard. Was he as aggressive off camera as he was on camera?
In some areas, but by and large, he was a fine man. Very, he was a philanthropic man, especially with his time. We formed a thing to take care of cerebral palsy children. And a group of us supported it and eventually built a big hospital. And Mo was there every Christmas. He was Santa Claus. We'd go up with him a week, a couple of weeks before, or a month before, and ask each patient, what do you want for Christmas?
Hmm.
And then we'd go out and try to get it. And Mo would go out and promote. And he was a great promoter. What we couldn't promote, if it wasn't prohibitive, we'd buy it.
Hmm.
So
he was the last one to go, wasn't he?
Yes.
And how did he disappear? What happened to him?
Cancer.
Cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was fighting that for years, I take it?
Oh, yes. Yes. He was lucky to live as long as he did. To tell you the honest truth, I hadn't seen him for about a year and a half. And we met at one of the big hotel dining rooms, and I didn't recognize him. I walked right past him.
He'd aged that much.
He had changed that.
Yeah,
much.
Probably because of the treatment.
He lost a tremendous amount of weight.
Uh-huh.
I hardly recognized him. But his voice was the same, and he hollered, "Hey, where the hell do you think you're going?" You know, kidding. And I recognized the voice, but I had to walk right up to him and look straight at him to recognize him.
Yeah.
And then I recognized his wife first. Toward the end, we were not as social as we had been at one time.
So, can you talk about the other characters really quickly?
It'll have to be quickly because
yes.
I've got to go.
I'd like to know kind of what their personalities were at the time off camera and what happened to them. And
well, what do you mean by what happened to them?
Well, what happened to them after the series ended? Where did they go? What did they do with their lives?
Oh, they worked a little bit if they could, wherever there was work. Joe Besser, of course, by that time was the third stooge, and he didn't want to go into vaudeville and play nightclubs with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys did that, and they made a few features, but after that was over with, then they did nothing. Larry had a stroke. He died at the motion picture home.
Oh, really?
Yes. And that's where Larry lived for, I think, the last couple of years of his life.
Were you still visiting him there?
Yes, I used to go and visit him. But I didn't know about Mo. I didn't visit Mo for a long, long time.
We didn't talk about Larry. What was his personality like off stage, Larry?
Larry?
Uh-huh.
Larry was a kindly man, very, very, how shall I say it? Just a very average fellow.
Mm-hmm.
He had no delusions of grandeur, and he was besieged with his fans who were constantly out there, which was good for him.
Yes.
Kept him busy, and this Larry Fine fan club,
mm-hmm.
and this sort of thing. But even after his stroke, his speech impediment wasn't so bad. He's in a wheelchair, though. But he'd tell me some of the funniest stories I ever heard. Where he'd pick them up, I don't know, but he still could tell funny stories. He was a very good storyteller.
Mm.
Larry was a very, very nice man. Of the Three Stooges, the originals, I dare say that Larry was more of a average guy than they were. Each of them had their own way of living.
Yeah.
Shemp was a wonderful fellow.
Now he was the latter.
Yes.
Yeah.
He came in before Joe Besser.
Mm-hmm.
When Curly died, we put Shemp in.
Uh-huh.
Then when Shemp died, we put Joe Besser in. But Shemp was one of the greatest storytellers. He could regale you with laughter and stories by the hour. By the hour. We used to go fishing down at the pier at at Santa Monica. Fanny Bryce lived down there. Mm-hmm. You know who Fanny Bryce was? Uh-huh. Funny girl. Mm-hmm. And she used to come down there and fish, and we'd put on a show between the three of us. Like, of course, I couldn't compare with those two, but I hold my own with jokes and songs and stories and gags, dancing, and what have you. People used to come there not to fish, but to see the show.
Now, you're talking about Shemp now.
Shemp, yeah. Uh-huh. Wonderful guy. Sweet, kind man.
Now, he passed away.
He died of a heart attack. He was sitting in the back of the car coming home from the fights, and he always fought every fight.
In the seat.
That's right.
Come on, get him, yeah.
Right. They smelled something burning and turned around, and here was his head slumped with his cigar burning through his shirt, and he wasn't feeling it, so they knew. So that's about, you've got enough.
And Joe DiRita?
Joe DiRita had done a few pictures for me some years back. And the boys knew him, and Joe was quite popular around Los Angeles. He had a lot of work. He worked at Universal. I don't know. I think he was under contract there at one time. Mm-hmm. But Joe's a very nice fellow.
Is he still alive?
Yes. He weighs about 300 pounds or something. Last time I saw him, I couldn't believe my eyes.
Really?
He's mammoth. But of course, he's working that way.
When I saw Spanky McFarlane, I was surprised he was still so obese.
Is he still fat?
Oh.
Yeah. Well, you have...
And I take it he's local. He works around here somewhere.
Who does?
Joe DiRita.
I don't know where he works. I don't know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him in any television. Mm-hmm. And I only watch old... Well, no, I see all the new films. Anything worthwhile, I either see it at the Directors Guild or at the Academy. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen him in anything. Now, Joe Besser works quite a bit in television, and I see him in films once in a while. Joe Besser is a very funny, capable man. Hmm. I featured him in a series of his own, then I tied he and Shemp together.
And this is Joe Besser up in the top?
Yes, the round face.
Yeah, I have all my books, you know, that I've found, I've not even mentioned him.
Oh, sure.
They have not mentioned him.
Oh, sure, I've got the books here.
A complete history of...
Sure, but
television.
But mainly the reason they don't is because people are interested in the original Three Stooges.
Uh-huh.
Here was I'll Never Heil Again.
Ah, yes. What book is that now?
That's Larry's Stroke of Luck.
Hmm.
Did you ever see that book?
No, I haven't seen that out in the market at all.
So that's on the market. This was the first picture, Woman Haters. See? Mm-hmm. And there's Larry. It's a good picture of him. It's Curly. Where the hell is Noah? He must have passed him up. Joan Crawford. MGM, 1933, that's when they came to Columbia with me. There's Ted Healy, right there.
Mm-hmm.
The three boys.
They co-starred with a lot of...
Yes.
A lot of people. Yes. Is there any kind of list of...
Yes, there is.
Of all of the movies?
Yes.
If you had one, if I could possibly borrow it, get a copy, I'd return it to you in a couple of days.
Well, I don't, except this, and I won't leave these out of my hands. I've had...
Oh, sure.
Not that I... It's nothing personal.
Oh, I...
But...
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.